Are you connected?
Hello and welcome to Are You Connected number 79. Today is July the 1st and Jen and I thought we might try this podcast today because we have an extra second. So I'm Lois Smethurst and with me today is my friend Jenny Ashby. Hello Jenny, how are you?
Good, hello Lois, I'm feeling really good with that one extra second. I just don't know what all the extra things I'll get done today.
I think we've just done them.
Yeah, that's right. And the weather report, it's pretty cold.
It's freezing, isn't it?
Yeah. We're getting ready for Hobart.
We are getting ready for Slide to Learn in Hobart.
We are.
But I was checking the temperatures yesterday and comparing Hobart to where we live, Jen, and there's not much difference really.
Oh, okay, it's the same. Yeah.
It's a little bit difference between Melbourne and Hobart, but not Warragul or Bendigo.
Right.
So I'm not sure that we'll notice.
Right.
It's pretty cold this winter, isn't it?
Bit
cool. So, Jen, you've had another big trip. You've been off to Mobile 2015.
I have. I went over to Mobile 2015. It was probably 3 weeks ago or something now. Time goes quickly when you get back. That was in Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
At a lovely big hotel, the La Paloma Western Resort, which has, you know, lots and lots of swimming pools. I didn't go in any.
But you had some nice hot weather.
I had lovely hot weather and it was going from this really cold to that warm. Nothing was too hot for me, I'll tell you what. I just soaked it up, the warmth. I've run out. I thought I would have brought some back with me and had enough stored up, but I haven't. But the conference was great. It was a great conference.
My favorite. What's your big takeaway?
Well, I was really surprised to find that there were teachers, like a new round of teachers coming through that didn't know things that we just took for granted, like apps, like using Explain Everything or that sort of thing.
Yep.
And so that was interesting. I had another thought about using different sites for inspiration for writing for students in some game sort of things as inspiration for writing. So that was
augmented reality or
just your old sort of games things. Tim Ryland did a really good few sessions on that.
Yeah.
Things like Epic Citadel. Do you remember Epic Citadel?
Yes, sort of thing. I've seen that.
Those sort of things where you can go in and create a narrative in there and then be writing about it and talking about it. So that was good to think about. Yeah. One of the great sessions I went to was Catherine Burdick's session on using Frolic. And frolic.com is a website where you actually make activities and lessons up for students. Right. And then they actually look at the activity and lessons on their iPad.
Okay.
In an app called Activity Spot.
Do they have to log in to see them?
They get a code. They get a code that they have to put in and then the lesson comes available to them. You have to set up your classes and everything. And then you can add all sorts of things to your pages. You can add videos. You can add questions. You can do everything. But the great thing about it is you can copy the activities and then just slightly change it for another student.
Yeah.
And you can then go through and tick which students are doing which activity and they all get individualised lessons.
So I'm just wondering about the privacy though. Do you have to put their names in at any stage or anything like that?
No, you don't have their names, no. You might have them named in your list, but you can put their name as whatever you like. It could be just their first name, initial or something.
So it's not one of those ones you'd have to worry about having permission for them to have signed into?
No, I don't think so. And you can do lots so much with it in that, you know, you could put a video on the page and then you could have different questions depending on the level of the student.
Yeah.
Or they can do a drawing response and draw on the iPad. Yeah. Drawing tools will come up and they can draw a response. And anything you put on the lessons, they can press and it will play it to them and read it to them.
Okay.
So they don't have to have reading skills, so it'll cover a lot of levels. Then you can make it really difficult for much older kids. So it was a really good thing. That was interesting.
It's a good use for assistive technology for kids with special needs, for example.
Yeah. It would be terrific for that. So it had lots of scope. Lots to work with, which is interesting.
So you really enjoyed that trip and you
So I had a great trip with everybody. Yes, I did my coding session and my Lego and stop animation sessions. So they both went really well. Bought a great big huge container of eyes, which was great.
Eyes for your Lego.
In one of the Lego shops, you know, the Lego stores, and they have the brick wall where you can buy all the bricks individually.
Yes.
Yes, we could get eyes there, a whole container of them.
I didn't know you could buy eyes, so that's good.
Would actually be a good competition, how many eyes in the container.
Okay, instead of jelly beans. Anyway, so they'll go in your whim centre, Jenny.
They will go in the whim centre. We've already used them and the kids have been making cronky wonkies in the whim centre. Mm-hmm. So they've had great time. Anything turns into a cronky wonky as soon as you put eyes on it, seems to be.
So a cronky wonky is
anything.
You want to anything, that's right.
Anything you want it to be. And it's interesting that the kids can make up the most wonderful stories about their cronky wonkies and tell you all about them. They're interesting. Mm-hmm. I wish they had a microphone. I wanted to record them the other day because they had some great stories.
Mm. And you didn't have the microphone with you? That's not like you.
That's not, is it?
Mm. No. So cronky wonkies, are they creatures generally or are they just free-form?
They could be creatures, they could be machines, they can be anything. Yeah, anything you make out of your freeform Lego. Yep.
Yeah.
Not following instructions.
Yes, so it's a thingy-me-jig made with Lego.
Yes.
That sounds wonderful.
Rather than following a pattern.
Okay. Mm. So what else have you been up to, Jen, apart from that? Oh, well, we've covered a lot of that, haven't we?
So, yeah, I've got back from my trip, which is good. It usually takes a while to get over the big flight home, but we've done that. And then we've had end of term. So we've had reports and we've had planning week. So that's been really great fun. Getting to go in and teach some classes and do my own planning day, which was great, getting ready for next term. So that's been a very nice time. And then lately you've been doing something as well, though, Lois. Didn't you go and visit a school?
I did because I didn't have planning day, but we actually have almost planning week in a sense because we finished school a week early this term.
Yeah.
A week earlier than the government schools. And so that gave us an opportunity to go and visit a school. And one of the philosophies at our school that we like to follow is the mindset philosophy where it's about people don't have a set intelligence as such. You know, there's not a limit on what you can learn or what you can do if you have an open mindset. So it's the idea that it's Carol Dweck is the author of it. Mm-hmm. And she says about how it's important that you don't think of yourself as a limited intelligence or that your talents are limited, that you can learn anything if you are prepared to put in the effort and the time. So Yennar Primary School has implemented a really strong mindset program. They found their kids were very compliant but weren't really interested, weren't learning in a sense. You know, they were just coming to school and going through the motions. Yep. So they've worked quite hard on developing a philosophy of children thinking about how they can learn and knowing that they might not get it right yet and failure is just part of learning. That one of their big things is that failure is nothing to hide. It's part of learning. So I haven't got it right yet, but I will learn to do it if I keep trying. And they've had a massive jump in their NAPLAN results and things like that, which they're not really that concerned about. But they work very hard with coaching the teachers and coaching the kids on how they can do a better job. They, you know, whatever they do with their students, they also do with their teachers. So they work with coaching and developing the language that they want kids to use and learning practices that they have. And what they've done is combined a group of quite interesting educationalists, I suppose you'd call them. So there's Carol Dweck and there's James Nottingham and he talks about feedback, so they do a lot on feedback. Mm-hmm. There's Guy Claxton and he has this idea, these ideas of learning. They're like overlays for learning. So, you know, you hear the teachers using his language as one of them is managing your distractions. So when we walked into the classroom, all the kids turn around to see who you are. And the teachers go, yes, go and have a look. Now manage your distractions, gets back to work. And you hear that often. So it's giving the kids the language to work in their classrooms. And one of the other books, the last one they talked about was Shirley Clark. And she talks about questioning techniques and assessment. So that was sort of a PD.
Yeah.
Of a really, really good PD.
So did you read all those books?
No, I haven't read them. I've ordered them. Right, they're part of my shopping, holiday shopping.
We'll list those on our website.
Yes.
I was really interested, Lois, in where you were telling me previously about the five types of feedback. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, I do too. Just quickly, one of the things that they do in their coaching is they film the teachers and they measure the five types of feedback that the teachers are giving the kids. And so some feedback is much more powerful than others. So there's confirmation feedback, corrective feedback, explanatory feedback, diagnostic, and elaborative feedback.
Which was the most effective?
Elaborative is much more powerful than confirmation, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But it also depends a bit on what year level you're teaching, because confirmation feedback you would use a lot more in the prep end rather than a grade six end.
Mm-hmm.
But some teachers who felt that they, you know how when you teach you think you're doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So the coaching and the filming actually helped them analyze what type of feedback they were doing most often.
Mm.
And then we could see some graphs where the amount of improvement the teachers had made through the coaching on the types of feedback they'd given. So, it was probably not a very complicated thing to do, but it had quite an impact on teachers' teaching techniques.
And what do you mean about elaborative feedback? What does that mean?
Elaborative feedback would be the type of thing where you said, I see what you've done there and I think that's great. But, I think probably that could be improved if you looked at these things and put that in there as well and considered this. So it's that idea of where you're at, how well you're going and how you can make it better.
Pushing further. Right.
Pushing further, yes. I see. And there's a lot of that. And children, there's a lot of children talking about how much effort they put into things.
So it's not really corrective. And did they challenge themselves? It's not corrective. It's different to corrective, isn't it?
Mm. Yes, corrective is...
Because you're not telling them.
No.
It should be this or that.
It's more like a little coaching session, I imagine.
Yeah, coaching.
Mm. I mean, I put in a link to a site that explains those five different feedbacks without actually buying the book. If you're interested, you can have a look
there. That's great.
Yeah.
That
was pretty exciting.
Yeah, we recently did a learning walk and we were looking for... teachers and different ways they in there just said talking with students that they're developing rapport with students and that was interesting and it was in their feedback as well because the way they gave feedback in different ways showed their different levels of rapport they had with students, so that was interesting.
I think that's really, well, if you don't have a relationship with the kids then you're not really going to be teaching very much, are you? It's just so important. It's like the cornerstone of a good teaching lesson is the relationship you build with the kids.
So you've had a lovely shopping time there. You'll be excited when the books arrive.
I'm just worrying I'm not going to have time to read them all, but at least I've got them. The principal at that school, when he has new teachers come into his school, he gives those books to his staff as part of their professional library. He doesn't lend them to them. He buys them and says, these are your books. And they have book club where they discuss the books. After school, they might have, instead of a staff meeting, they'll have a book club and they'll have read a chapter and discuss it.
I wonder how they fit that in. It's just hard to fit everything in.
Well, how powerful is that?
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? We need to do that a bit more with our daily five.
Yeah, I think that's the sort of thing. So you would take the daily five book and you would pull out a chapter together and say, how is this thing?
I need to do that with my reading recovery. I'm forever looking in the book and seeing different pieces.
I've been trying to design my new intervention program too for my kids, and I'm sort of thinking about going to a boot camp type arrangement where they come for a while and we really concentrate on some skills for them. And so anyway, that's a bit off the track there. So Jen, what else? You've been shopping too. You've had a lovely shopping time.
I've been shopping and buying some robots,
which has been great. That'd be fun.
Robots.
More fun than books.
Solar robots.
Really?
Robots made from tin cans, just from an aluminium can.
Right.
So they're going to be lots of fun.
Have you ordered those online or are they available in Ashton?
I bought them in the environment shop in Northcote.
Right.
It's called Green Science.
Yeah.
So they come in these kits and there's a green rocket kit as well, which Some people could probably just make one of these themselves, because it's the old empty lemonade plastic bottle, and you use that as your pump and put a hose to it, and then you stand on the bottle and the rocket goes off, sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so just I guess that it's in a kit, and it'll give you ideas to build further.
I think so too, and it just gives you that idea that this is science in a sense too, that, you know, there's a kit, oh, yeah, I could do that. And so it's making those ideas explicit, isn't it?
And I've been wanting to do the rockets for so long, since I went to Miami last year actually, because they had a rocket club. And I came back and thought, yeah, I want to do that rocket club, but I just haven't been able to get myself to get all the pieces. So when I saw this kit, I thought, that's exactly what I need. And we can use that. And once kids see it, they'll bring pieces.
Yep.
They'll bring empty bottles. They'll bring the tubing and all sorts of things for it. And then we'll have lots of them. We can have a club and go out on the oval and launch our rockets.
And then you can measure how far they go. And
and actually, it'll be good because through lines for next term is all about physical science and planets and all that sort of thing.
Yep.
So that'll be good doing rockets at the same time. I think that'll match them quite well. I've ordered a drone, which is really exciting.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I see that in the notes there, a drone.
A drone, that's going to be really exciting. I think it's a parrot drone, and it runs by using Scratch programming.
Oh.
So you program it with Scratch, and then it does what you tell it to do. Won't that be exciting?
That would be very exciting. I'd be really interested to hear how that goes.
Off your iPad. I think you do it on your iPad, and then it must Bluetooth to it or Wi-Fi to it or something, and then it flies around. I've been watching Adam Bellow fly one around at ISTE, and I think Gary Stager also had one and was flying it around.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay. I so want one. My kids would love it. I just – can't
wait to see. Well, we saw one of those a couple of years ago, didn't we, at Maroochydore, but they weren't quite in the they couldn't buy them then.
I think they're a lot more developed now, and also they're it's to do with the programming more.
Yes.
These ones are anyway. And
more accessible now.
I like the idea of having a hands-on device that is then controlled by the programming.
So do I.
Rather than a sprite on the screen.
Yeah.
I don't know why. They just – that hands-on stuff, they like it, don't they?
Yeah, so you can do that with your Kinect as well, with your Xbox Kinect. You can have Scratch programming.
Yeah.
How does that link? It links with your...
Because we do it with the We Do Lego.
Yeah, that's right.
That, like, your USB goes into your computer, and then your little Scratch thing comes on your Scratch to do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so you can do that with that as well, which is great.
Yeah. And a Pendo, Jen. What's a Pendo?
Oh, well, don't tell anybody. It's a secret.
Jenny, microphone.
I've gone and bought a Pendo, which is a pad.
Yeah.
A tablet. Tablet of some sort. And
oh, no, not a tablet.
I just saw it in Officeworks and thought, $69.
That's cheap, isn't it?
I just thought, what can it do? Could it be anything useful? Is it any good? How could they make it to $69?
Was it on sale, or was that that's the standard price?
Well, they didn't. I asked the girl that, and she couldn't find out for me, so it must just be the price. Right. Yeah. And it was in one of those tubs they have, you know, a whole heap of them with the sign. Okay. And, you know, I brought it home and was on the internet easy as, you know, downloaded all the apps from the Play Google, Store and everything. And
Google Play Store.
Yeah, so I've got Book Creator on it and Explain Everything on it, and it's doing lots of creative things, like another tablet might do. So I'm thinking $69.
That's a really interesting sort of development. And when you think about what we might do in schools now, if you're only paying $69, that's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it, to $600?
I think parents could buy a $69 one and we wouldn't have to worry about managing it.
That's right. You would only have to worry about getting it safely onto the internet, and that would be about it.
That's right. We could just have to manage getting it on the internet, and they could have an app list like we used to once upon a time. We did that.
That's right.
When we first got our iPads.
Yeah.
And it was much easier than having to do all this management of them all and adding apps and taking off apps and all that sort of thing. Oh, gosh,
yes. I'm doing a bit of that again. I'm back to configuring iPads again.
So what have you been doing with that?
Oh, well, it's just a set that I've had, and it's actually it's much more useful to be able to do it yourself, because if you need an app on the iPad, you don't have to wait for the technicians to come and do it. So I'm reconfiguring two sets of iPads for school. But my biggest challenge has been collecting all the free apps that you're supposedly entitled to when you buy an iPad. Because there's five of them.
Yes.
Which I'm a bit annoyed that they're not on the iPads when you buy it, but you have to actually apply through the support program and go to the iOS fulfillment section and then fill in all the data and find the invoice and send it to them, and then they validate it and hopefully send back all the
codes.
And then they can go into Configurator. Because if you don't do it that way, every time you reconfigure your iPads, everything you've downloaded onto them, which you can download them from the App Store, disappears.
Yep, I had to do that.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
And it took me a while, a few days, to figure out what to do. Yeah.
Well, I've sent a couple of emails. Anyway, so that's yes, done. I'm doing that again. Yes. Well, it's not done, but it will be done before Hobart. So, and what else we got to talk about, Jeff?
And you were going to talk about creating TV.
Oh, it's interesting because I'm going to do the Let's Make a TV show at Hobart, and it's like to learn.
Yes.
And I've made one show this year with my new school and my new students, and I've been reflecting on what would I tell people in Hobart, because things have changed quite differently, because I'm in a school that's much more locked down and much more, let's say, privacy is a much bigger issue. And I can't use Google Apps for Education, for example, which was my go-to app, and so I'm having trouble with that. But I'm thinking, well, what – and the show, the first show I've made, I wouldn't be putting it out publicly. We've learned a lot, and we used it as that. We knew it wasn't going to be brilliant, but we wanted to make one in entirety to see what we needed to know and what we needed to do. And the kids have made it, and they've enjoyed it. But I figured there's things that are really important that I hadn't really considered before because I've taken them for granted. And one of them is that you need to know your kids really well.
Oh, yes.
You need to understand what their strengths are and what their – because it's a real lesson in letting – like I like to let the kids have a lot of control. But it's very important that to know their strengths. And I found, these kids, who works well together and who doesn't. And you need to, I need to do more work with showing kids how to write the script in a sense in presenting information succinctly, where I guess in my last school I'd had a few years of that, whereas kids had built that up over years and then they created that culture and there was all that rich media that other children had seen and had been used to seeing. So they understood how it worked. We're just beginning with that culture in this school.
So you're starting from scratch.
Yeah, it's a real scratch. But anyway, it was fun.
I think it's often really good to be put back in that situation because
it is.
You do get your eyes sort of not seeing everything because you don't see a lot of the things that
you don't understand.
Might see. Yeah.
Well, I just, you know, I hadn't, you don't realise how rich that culture is until you leave it and have to start it again.
That's
so
right.
That'll be useful for participants in the Slide to Learn or people doing this because I'll understand perhaps where they're coming from.
I'll be really interested to see it again because my school's actually been doing some filming and making movies and to do with BTN.
Yes. And yeah, I've used BTN as a basis.
Yeah, and they're using a lot of the BTN notes and things for it. And now I've got a few classes that they're doing them, and it's really great because I'm not doing that. It's not me. It's the classroom teachers are doing it. So that makes you feel really good, even though you're out of a job. But it's good that they're taking it on as part of their curriculum. So, you know, kids have done iMovies and things on their different topics they've been doing in there about history and things and all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's what you want.
Been really great. So
And BTN behind the news for those people who might not have BTN in the country is it is really a perfect example of what students could be doing and how they can explain their knowledge, isn't it? And I've used that. We've analysed those movies and counted how many times the image has changed, and we've also looked at how, you know, what sort of images they've used, and are they always? They're not always. Images that are new, the images that they may have resurrected for something else, but the images match the speaking and all those sort of things. So we've used that to help the kids decide what they need to put in their own movies.
And there's a lovely brand new green screen waiting for you in Hobart, Lois.
Oh, so that is going to be
so good, isn't it?
Well,
we all want one.
Yes. Well, we might, because I've been using a blue cloth thrown over two whiteboards in the middle of my room at the moment.
And, I mean, you do things like that and you put up with it, but then when you see something like this, you think, oh, that'd be nice.
Well, it works quite well. It's just it's not – the quality of the film isn't as good as you'd like. And the other issue is that the uniform at my school has a lot of blue in it. Oh, really need a green screen, not a blue
screen. I was thinking, I wonder what uniform I was at her school.
Blue.
Blue's a fairly popular colour to wear too.
It is, and it's really nice. It matches the blue screen quite well.
We've got a few kids wearing a bit of green, even though it's not school uniform, because it's Minecraft.
Yeah.
So they wear a bit of green Minecrafty stuff around. So that works out well. Well, that's going to be great, your TV session.
Oh, I hope so. It's been a while. I'm a bit rusty. I'm a bit rusty with all the transferring. Because one of the hardest things with that is transferring all the different pieces from different people into one spot and getting it back to make into a film. So that'll be the trickiest bit.
But at least you'll be able to use Google Docs or something, won't you?
Yes, I will. Well, I do, because that does work really well.
Mm.
Anyway, sessions, you're doing the coding session and the Cronky Wonky session.
So the Cronky Wonky session is so much fun. We get to make lots of great Cronky Wonkies and animate them using Lego Movie Maker. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
I do like the Movie Maker.
Plus we'll relate it back to literacy and numeracy, which is good.
Which is important, yes.
So that gives us not all fluffy, but we've actually got some robust learning happening.
Yes. Well, it's not all fluffy, is it? I find
Rigor. That's what they call rigor. It. A bit of rigor in there. So that would be
okay.
Good.
Yes, rigor. I like rigor. And last but not least, how is it's not last. I see that you've been – we're talking about learning and different things, and you've been to Basto. And
yes.
What were you learning at Basto, Jean?
Well, as my school is planning for a total rebuild.
Which is fantastic, isn't it?
We're on the lookout for all sorts of things we can learn about for designing a new school.
Mm-hmm. And, which is a big thing. It's a really big thing. Don't we have architects that do that?
Yeah, but we actually have to have our pedagogies and all that sort of thing in line and what our beliefs are as much as the actual bricks and mortar. Looking at learning spaces, we were looking at learning spaces with Notosh, with Ewan McIntosh.
Yes.
And that was really great to see and just consider some different learning spaces that you would have in your school and just think about the classrooms we have at the moment and what sort of learning spaces they are.
They're all fairly the same, aren't they?
Well, we have a lot of watching spaces.
Yeah.
And we don't really have a lot of different sorts of spaces. So he actually had seven different sorts of spaces that we were looking for. We had to go around Basto and look and see which spaces we could actually see in the building there with offices and different working spaces that were there. So we were looking for secret spaces, which are spaces that allow you to work quietly by yourself.
Quiet times, yes. Mm. Well, you want to just concentrate and you don't want people interrupting you.
And I think we have those at school and we often call them the learning bubble.
Yeah.
And kids are in their learning bubble.
Yep.
So we have that.
Yes.
Which is good. And then we're looking for collaborative spaces where kids can actually really collaborate well together.
Yeah.
And collaborate with each other.
Sometimes you need a bit more space for that to happen because usually collaborative spaces can be noisy, like kids working and talking together. They need to be able to talk. And so when you get a large number of children talking together, often they need a bit more room, don't you think?
Yes. And, I mean, just the setup of tables and things in a room can really create collaborative spaces or non-collaborative.
Yeah, that's true too.
You know, and I know I still see desks in rows at times and things like that.
Do you?
Yeah, and kids aren't collaborating when they're like that at all.
No.
They're doing
That's usually at the end of grade six, isn't it? The last month in grade six, too much collaboration happens at the end of grade six sometimes.
Well, maybe they're doing some test preparation.
Yes, well,
So, I mean, we do have a lot of spaces that are for watching at the moment, and you do need a watching space where you can watch things, particularly if you've got another space which is for performing.
Yeah.
If you perform, performing. you want to be able to be watching a performance. So you need those performance and watching spaces.
Yeah.
Which is good to have. Yeah, so we went through lots of different sorts of spaces and a participation space where you can actually participate and join in activities, that sort of area.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to think of and how you might have all those spaces in one area.
Well, see, I imagine you might have something like a creating space too, which is where you can have messy things.
Yes.
You know, art and building or all those sort of things.
And, of course, a publishing space.
Oh, right. That's a good idea.
And one of the interesting spaces that they mentioned was a data space.
Right.
Where you can actually have data on show and it could be electronic, it could be digital, and then from that data students are doing different things about it. So it could be a data, you know, we talk about data walls and things, but it could be a data display that shows just the weather conditions and all the weather things. Or it could be a data thing that shows pollution.
All right. That's interesting.
It could be a data thing that's about population and things like that, and then kids can do things from that.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
That would be a good one. I can imagine that.
And it was interesting, actually. They've got a data wall at Bastow that goes through the decades, and each decade has a different pedagogy and person who developed that pedagogy listed. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting to see all the different pedagogies that have come along the way through the different decades.
Yes, it's
a really nice wall. I like that. Yeah,
so. That reminds me of a school I saw that had all the different phases of handwriting. They must have collected them across the grades.
Yeah.
And so they had from the preps or pre-preps right up to what, you know, lovely cursive grade six handwriting looked at. And I thought, well, that's a data wall when you think about it, because children could go and see where their handwriting fitted in that developmental and they could see where they need to go to next. And I thought that was quite a good idea.
Yeah.
So that would be a data wall.
Yeah, and even pictures of data. So, you know, where you have different pictures around the place on display. So that was really interesting, all the different sorts of learning spaces.
Okay, so that was good.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's about time for us to finish up, Jen. We're getting close. We're on over our half hour. So.
We are trying to finish up. Well, you have a good rest of your holiday, Lois. We'll see you next week in Hobart.
Well, we will see. We're sort of back to work in one way, aren't we?
Inside to learn.
In Slide to Learn. So we'll see you then, and we'll probably have a podcast soon after that to talk about Slide to Learn and how it all went.
We will let everyone know. Well,
thanks, everyone, for listening, and thank you, Jen.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.